You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. Also, follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
I'm well, Mike. What's going on, team? It's feeling good right now. Enjoying watching these two NFC teams, Falcons and Seahawks, battle it out, knowing that my team doesn't really get affected by that whatsoever. So
we're going to be talking in a little bit about some teams that we might be concerned with. We'll go through the seeding, how the playoff picture looks right now in the NFC, and what that outlook is. But first, Ben, you have a question, and I went on a rant about this, I think a week ago, about I hate the MVP discussion, and I hate award discussions. You have a question that's going to force me into a tough conversation. What is your question, Ben?
Yeah, just because I hate you. No. All right, here's the thing. Really, I have like one more, I think, interesting conversation-worthy question at the end. But that question is secondary. It was born of the first question, where I tweeted out this morning. I said, if anything, this game against Dallas helps solidify my case and supports my case that I've been making, which is that I think Doug Peterson has a stronger case for coach of the year than Carson Wentz does MVP. Now, this was, of course, immediately taken by most people as me saying Carson Wentz shouldn't be the MVP. Carson Wentz isn't a good MVP quarterback. I had one tell me that I said that Carson was a system quarterback, which I think is a little bit aggressive. I think that Doug Peterson has a great system.
What were they calling you, like Kyan Fahey or something like that?
I mean, I don't know. All I said that a lot of Carson Wentz's success in his second year is a result of playing in an excellent system. That doesn't make him a system quarterback. A system quarterback implies that he can only work in a system, which, by the way, isn't a bad thing. Like, I think that system quarterback has a negative connotation. System quarterbacks are great. Just make sure they're in the right system and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I think Alex Smith is a system quarterback, and maybe that's not very, like, you know, I think that's a pretty obvious one. You know, that's easy to say. I think Tom Brady's a system quarterback. I absolutely do. I think he's a pretty good example of a system quarterback. That being said, he's also probably the best quarterback of all time. Like, winningest, you know, greatest, whatever. He's not the most talented, but he's a system quarterback. He's just a really freaking good system quarterback, right? But anyway, this is a diversion. So this conversation got me to the point where, you know, somebody said, listen, Carson Wentz is the best player on the best team in the NFL that makes him the MVP. And I said, I don't think Carson Wentz is the best player on the Eagles. And so my question to you is, Mike, you know, obviously it's an apples to oranges comparison. It's very difficult to take a cornerback and an offensive tackle and say, who's the better player, right? You know, every measure you use there is relative, right? Well, you know, like, oh, well, this cornerback is the third best corner in the NFL and this offensive tackle is the fifth best offensive tackle, so it's the corner. Yeah, but the offensive tackle and the corner classes are different. So there's a lot of moving pieces. But just plainly, you think Carson Wentz is the best Philadelphia Eagle?
If you take positional value out of things, right now, I think that Jason Kelce is playing like the best center in football. I think that you could make a case for Fletcher Cox being one of the best interior linemen in football. Outside of that, I don't think there's Leighton Johnson. So that's three. I think you can make the argument for that are the best players on this team before Carson Wentz. And that's really tough for me to pick any one of those. But like I said, if you take positional value out of it, the best center in the league is Jason Kelce, so I think he would have the best argument. I think Lane Johnson is a top five offensive tackle. He's not the top one, and I don't think Fletcher Cox is better than, say, like Aaron Donald. So yeah, I mean, Jason Kelce would be my only one now, just based on the way that he's playing this year. Long term, obviously, I'd rather have, you know, Carson Wentz. That's obvious. So I don't want to get too
right,
you know, crazy people in my mentions or whatever. But what about you? How do you parse that out?
Right. So I said Kelce and Cox easy. I think are easily better football players than Carson Wentz. Mm. I think that you can make a case for Malcolm Jenkins to be a better football player than Carson Wentz. And then I said, you know, we forget because he's inactive, but Jason Peters, I think, is a better football player than Carson Wentz. I didn't think Lane Johnson. I think I'm a little bit lower on Lane than a lot of people. I think Lane just tends to be a little bit inconsistent. I got chirped a little bit on Twitter because I said on one of the preview pods, I think he would struggle with D-Law, and he did not struggle with D-Law. So props to Lane for proving me wrong there. But I think that, yeah, right now you could say on the active roster, Carson is maybe tied for third if you want like to make it a conversation between him and Jenk. And then if you've got the full active roster, I think Carson's maybe the fourth best player on this roster. And this also brings up another thing that kind of like gets on my nerves that we should talk about a little bit. I think there's a very important distinction to be made between he is one of the top five players in the league versus he's playing like a top five player in the league, right? Because there's a factor of consistency that has to go into a player's performance before I can say that they're like this good. You know what I mean? Like, let's bring it back to the Adam Thielen example, right? If you've listened to this pod even once, you know that I love Adam Thielen, wide receiver for the Minnesota Vikings. I have a weird disproportionate love for him, right? Adam Thielen right now, when we talked about him a couple pods ago, I said that he's playing like a top five wide receiver. You know, you couldn't find three wide receivers playing better football than Adam Thielen. I don't think he's a top five wide receiver in this league. You know what I mean? Like right now, I don't think Julio Jones is playing up to his potential. I don't think Mike Evans is playing up to his potential as they regularly do, right? Now, if we see, you know, for the rest of the season, moving into next season, that Thielen continues to outplay these guys, now we'll move him into that conversation. But, you know, this right. is, it's such a knee-jerk sort of a league, right? So much recency bias, right? I mean, like, do we want to talk about, like, who's playing better right now, Dak or Wentz? Right now, Wentz is playing better. Who's had the better career thus far? It's probably Dak, right? These are the issues that we get into. And so Carson has been playing some great football, but I don't think he's the best player in the Philadelphia Eagles yet. And for a second-year quarterback, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And like you said, it's the argument of the recency bias of it all and the consistency over a period of time. This year, Patrick Robinson is playing like a better cornerback than Chris Harris Jr. Chris Harris Jr. has been a top five nickel corner for the past four, 5 years. So absolutely, you know, overall, I'm going to take Chris Harris Jr. So, yeah, I see what your point is with that for sure.
Yeah, this is just me, getting steamed up a little bit. This is my, you know, when Mike gets frustrated, we get, like, these long, like monologues with, like, fancy Roman language and stuff. I just ask questions. That's all I do.
You got to work through it, yeah. What was the other question that you had for me?
Yeah, so the original question that kind of led to that conversation, which, you know, obviously we've already discussed ad nauseum MVP and coach of the year stuff. But my case was, you can make a stronger case for Doug Peterson as coach of the year than Carson as MVP, in my opinion. Like, the main brunt of that statement is just, Carson's getting a ton of national media attention for MVP. Doug is getting very little for coach of the year. And I just don't think you can divorce them enough to not have at least both of them be strongly in that conversation, right? And so I guess, like, the way I'll, like, kind of pose it to you, challenge it to you, is if you could only have one of those awards given out, either MVP to Carson or Coach of the Year to Doug, which one do you think, like, is more deserving? Which one do you think should happen?
I mean, you know how much I love the MVP debate. I mean, the Coach of the Year debate isn't as hotly debated as other ones, but it's still pretty debated pretty much every year. I would say that it should be given to Bill Belichick. The fact that Jason Garrett has won it more than Bill Belichick in recent history is absolutely absurd, considering the way he got coached out of the building on Sunday night. And in several other cases where the Cowboys are banged up and they can't seem to adjust. With that said, the coach of the year award just seems kind of useless to me. And I'd rather it go to our young playmaker, our young quarterback with Carson Wentz. I think that means more. So yeah, I'll go Carson. Yeah. I'll go Carson. But I'm not saying that you couldn't argue more for the coach of the year for Peterson as well, because they're 9-1. He's taken a second year quarterback. He's turned him around almost entirely from an average to poor rookie season for a quarterback. He's had all these pieces. He's had all these injuries to deal with as well. And every week we come on here and we talk about scheme and the way they make adjustments at halftime, just like they did against the Cowboys, just like they did against the 49ers. They lead the league in second half points. So, yeah, I could definitely see that argument for Peterson as well.
Yeah, I also, you know, this may be a disliked take as well, but I don't think you get the insane, and I have to go back to the numbers, because I did a post in the beginning of the year about what numbers we could expect from Carson, given the historical trends of first-year quarterbacks to second-year quarterbacks. I think his numbers jump, just from a pure statistical perspective, is historical. I think it is. But you don't get a guy in his second year out of FCS ball and is only fifth or sixth year playing, you know, like, quarterback. He only started it sometime in high school, right? He's only fifth or sixth year starting, something like that. He doesn't make the leap he's currently making without a huge coaching impact, which goes to Peterson and then also Frank Reich and John DeFilippo, quarterback's coach, you know, all those guys who are in the building. I think what Peterson has done as far as getting production out of everybody. You know, so many people score touchdowns. So many, as we've talked about, those forgotten guys, Michael Kendricks, Vinny Curry, Nelson Agholor, all these guys who've seen better production, kind of reach their potential. Even Zach Ertz was always inconsistent and left you wanting a little something more. And now he's been so much better as a player. You know, all this, hey, to me, it all goes back to coaching. This team is so incredibly well coached. And I just wish that that got more recognition than it is currently. But, you know, honestly, anything, you know, anything is good. Like, I'm not going to complain.
No, but I mean, you make a great point there, because this is kind of the same thing that Jimmy Kempski was saying when we had him on a couple of weeks ago. Jalen Mills has taken a huge step. Like you said, Zach Ertz has hit the ground running. You look at the other players like Trey Burton, the role players are playing fantastic. Corey Clement is playing excellent ball, and you know, we're still not sure if he's just a guy or not. Like, he could be just be Chris Polk, as Brandon Lee Gauton said, which it's funny to me. I kind of agree with that. But yeah, so many different role players and players that have been in battle before playing really well, like Patrick Robertson and so on and so forth, man. The list goes on and on and on. And yeah, I completely attribute that to coaching. So I think Doug Peterson has been doing a fantastic job. I know his approval ratings have got to be going through the roof. Okay, I want to remind you guys, rate, review, leave your Twitter handle in the review. Let us know how you feel about us. Give us 5 stars. That qualifies you to enter a contest for a free PFF Edge subscription, which is a $40 value. I use it all the time. It is a fantastic resource. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week. You got Patriots or Steelers, Eagles or Cowboys. Well, let me tell you this, where you're betting at is just as important as who you're betting on. So that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing, and they have the fastest payout, seriously, just 2 business days. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game betting, live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile website that makes wagering on the go an absolute breeze. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 100% bonus. Use promo code LOEagles, that's LOEagles, to activate your offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. This episode of Locked On Eagles is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. This episode of Locked On Eagles was brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, so now we're going to get into the discussion of some of the top seed teams in the NFC, how we think their outlook is, who scares us the most. Okay, so seed number 2 goes to the Minnesota Vikings. They are 8-2. They are 6-1 in the conference. They have a direct tiebreaker over the Saints. Last week, they took one on the Rams, 24-7. Made the Rams look a bit impotent. And next week, they travel to the Lions for, that's actually this week because it's Thanksgiving. Forgot about that. It's coming up fast.
Happy holidays. It's going to be lit. Like, I'm excited for that. Those Thanksgiving days. They look good.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one for sure. So how are your feelings on the Vikings as far as, because that defense, I don't think they've played all season up to their potential. I think when they played the Rams, you saw the potential of what that defense can really be. And they shut down, which at the time was the highest scoring offense in the NFL that now belongs to the Eagles. So what do you think about the Vikings, Case Keenum, their defense, their prospects?
Yeah, that's the team of which I'm the most scared, to be honest with you. Right now, they're at a weird place where they're getting good enough play from Case Keenum that they're not losing, but they probably could be getting better play from Teddy Bridgewater, but maybe they wouldn't. And so if they move Teddy in and then they got to put Case back, and Case hasn't lost the job, but there's so many pieces there, right? It's very confusing. Yeah. And it's gonna require a deft hand to maneuver that. It really is. You know, if they can continue to get winnable production out of Case Keenum, that's still such a weird sentence, then they shouldn't move him, right? But the second he really starts to struggle and drop off, then you've got to consider moving Bridgewater in there, because I think he's simply a better player. He gives you a better chance to win. Now, the injuries that they've overcome there in Minnesota are very impressive. Dalvin Cook went down, man. Dalvin Cook is on the IR. That, you know, that, like, he was, that's a second round running back, should have been drafted in the first round. You know, a lot of character concerns, a lot of, you know, from what I heard from draft people, there people were very worried about the guys who were around Dalvin Cook, his friends, and kind of, you know, how peers around him pressured him into acting certain ways. And so he was always going to be a more desirable target for small market players like Minnesota, where, you know, you're not going to be in that much of a community there. And so incredible value for Minnesota. They have Sharif Floyd, who's an incredible defensive lineman, who's on the NFI list. I don't know when he's going to be back, right? But they had two key pieces down. And then Sam Bradford, your starting quarterback, goes down. Mm. And then you got to handle this whole Keenum situation, right? And they've done really, really well to account for those. That offensive line is significantly improved as it was last year. I mean, Riley Reiff, left tackle, has been playing quite well. Huge addition for them. Obviously, through the draft, Pat Elflein, man, that center out of Ohio State, locking it down, playing very, very good football. They've got Kyle Rudolph back. I know he was injured for a little bit this year. So they've got the pieces back. That offense is clicking. It's moving well. It's the defense that scares me the most. And the defense worries me because, firstly, it's an insane amount of talent, right? You just read this off, like Danielle Hunter, Linval Joseph, Everson Griffin, Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, Trey Waynes, Andrew Sendejo, Harrison Smith, Xavier Rhodes, along with Terrence Newman, Mackenzie Alexander in that defensive backfield. That's all mad, right? That's all absurd amount of talent, draft capital. All of that is insane. And I've alluded to this before. I think I may have said it here. Maybe I wrote it somewhere. I don't know if it's been, you know, explicitly unlocked on Eagles. When I look at front sevens across the league that I think can hang with the Eagles offensive line right now, the only one that I think has a real shot is this Minnesota front seven. And that's what scares me the most.
So what about the Saints doesn't scare you as much as the Vikings? Because this is a team who also is 8-2. They're the third seed right now. They're also 6-1 in the conference. Only third seed because they have that direct tiebreaker with the Vikings. Third in the league in points. First in the league in yards. Second in the league in passing yards. And third in the league in rushing yards. If I had told you through 10 games that Drew Brees would only have 15 touchdowns and they would be 8-2, I would have called you a freaking liar. But this team can pound you inside, and they can toss it outside and get to the edges, too, with Kamara when they want to. I mean, like Ingram over 800 yards, Kamara 450 yards, plus a bunch of receiving yards. I mean, they both, you can play both of them in fantasy together. It is a fearsome, fearsome run game. And that defense, they'll make you pay, man. They've got a really strong perimeter defense. Marshawn Lattimore's coming on. They're on the longest win streak in the NFL right now. So what do you like about the Saints, and what puts them just a notch below the Vikings for you?
Right. So the Saints, yeah, I like Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara is going to win me a lot of money in fantasy this year, Mike, and that's what's important. That offensive line is playing exceedingly good football. How about rookie right tackle Ryan Ramczyk, man? I mean, when he was coming out, you know, I had Cam Robinson higher. I didn't like Garrett Bowles as much, but Ramczyk was really that NFL-ready sort of a guy. Saints got him at a great discount price at the end of the first round there. They traded back up to get him, which was a huge move. Really just a fantastic addition for them. You know, two long-term starters, Marshawn Lattimore, Marcus Williams there in the secondary. Those guys playing great football. The Saints, after the draft, we all kind of said that the Saints got, like, you know, that was a very common pick for one of the best drafts. You know, the Saints and actually, incidentally, the Vikings as well were two of the most common picks for a really, really strong draft. And yeah, it's panned out for the Saints very, very clearly. Mm. But here's why the Saints don't worry me as much. That defense has been outplaying its talent level, and I think it's going to regress. Because and they just lost edge Alex Okafor. He's going to be out for a significant period of time with an ankle injury, which is a dang shame. But he was playing unbelievably good football compared to what we saw from him in Arizona, where he used to be. Right now they've got, you know, starting a linebacker, they've got AJ Klein, Monte Teo gets in there sometimes, Haoluiki Kikaha is in there, Craig Robinson, all of these guys playing better football than you've usually seen from them over the years. And then, you know, that kind of three safety secondary with Kenny Vaccaro, Von Bell in there. Von Bell hasn't really been exposed. He kind of plays the nickel, and I don't think he's a very good nickel, to be frank, but he hasn't really been exposed yet. And then Ken Crawley, their opposite corner of Lattimore, has been playing well too, and that's quite the surprise as far as I go. I think, you know, no one really saw the onset of this Saints defense. I think it's been playing very good football, but I just don't think it's playing to the realization of its talent level. I think it's punching above its weight, frankly. And I expect that to regress as the year goes on. And while, as you alluded to, I think the Minnesota defense has been punching under its weight a little bit.
Yeah, and they both average plus 0.2 turnovers per game. So it's not like they're completely blowing away the turnover battle like the Jacksonville Jaguars are, who are ranked first at 1.1 per game, and the Philadelphia Eagles at plus 1.0. Yeah, that Jacksonville defense is crazy. But okay, so then you look at the next set of teams here, the three lost teams. You've got the Los Angeles Rams 7-3, 4-3 in the conference, the Carolina Panthers 7-3, 4-3 in the conference, and the Seattle Seahawks, who are playing tonight. We'll see what the record is after tonight. Like I said, like we said, we're recording during the Monday Night Football game, so we're not going to have that result, but we're going to talk about them as a 6-3 team, not as a 6-4 or a 7-3 team. Out of those three teams, who do you see making a potential push to move the Saints or the Vikings down and get a second seed?
I could see it, I think, the most from the Rams. And that's another situation where that defense is probably punching above its weight a little bit. But and I've alluded to this before. When I talk playoffs, I talk elite units, right? I want to because and this is one of the greatest things about the NFL playoff system is that it's one shot. It's one and off, right? When there's no seven game series, right? The Golden State Warriors are going to beat any team in the NBA, obviously asterisk, I know, Cleveland, whatever. But like the Golden State Warriors have a talent level and such a talent divide between them and the next team that over a seven-game series, statistically, they should win four of those games, right? Even if they drop one, drop two that they shouldn't drop, right? Whereas with the NFL, it's one game and then you move on, right? And so if you have a unit that can take over a football game, that if it's on, it's very difficult for you to lose. You can beat teams that are really more well-rounded and just playing better than you because you had that one hot game, right? That's why we talk about coming into the playoffs hot, stuff like that. The Rams have an offense that when we've seen it, when that Rams offense is clicking, it's you don't stop it. It's been incredibly dangerous, right? They were averaging before that Minnesota game almost 30 points per game over the season, which is absurd, right? That's straight mad. And so I think that, you know, you get a team like that, a young coach with McVay, young quarterback like Goff. I don't know how well they'd hold up in the playoffs, but you get a team like that, very motivated. You think they have a chance to kind of pull off an upset. That offense could just pile points and points and points on you. So the Rams are the one where I could really foresee them making a push for that second seed. They've got a tough schedule, though, so they got work to do.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And I agree with you on the Rams. And the reason is not only can they score with anyone most of the time, you know, last week was a bit of an aberration, but also their special teams play. And special teams win football games. Johnny Hecker is having a Pro Bowl season at punter, and that may sound ridiculous, but it freaking matters,
you,
man.
You got to send a punter to the Pro Bowl, man. They need one over there.
But yeah, I mean, as far as distance and directional punting, I mean, he is absolutely killing it this year. And then you've got Greg the Leg Zuerlein, who's been almost automatic this year. I think he's only got one missed field goal unless he missed one in the last game. But either way, he was coming into it 27 for 28. And then Pharaoh Cooper has a return for a touchdown he had on the first play against the Jaguars. They're getting their top five for non-offensive touchdowns per game. So that includes their defense as well. So they're generating points in other ways as well. It's not just the offense going into that top scoring team, so or at least the former top scoring team now that the Eagles have taken over. I feel like I'm going to say that a lot because it feels really good to say that as far as the Eagles go.
Yeah, I feel it. I like it.
So yeah, I would absolutely go with the Rams. All right, so now we're going to move on to Pick a Prospect. If you haven't heard Pick a Prospect before, this is where Ben and I will take a college player, college draft eligible player, and try to project him to the Eagles moving forward. This is a very Eagles-centric focus as we talk about this prospect, someone that the Eagles might be eyeing in the offseason with a realistic chance of getting him. Unfortunately, I'm the most unprepared host in the world, so I'm going to leave this one to Ben and blame it on the fact that we're just running a little short on time. So Ben, who do you have for us?
Mike and I have recorded two podcasts today, and Mike has a newborn baby. He's on baby duty today, so there's no, like, don't buy that slander. But Mike, I cannot figure out Malik Jefferson out of Texas. All right, this guy's been keeping me up at nights. I did his summer eval, and I was not comfortable with him.
Can I ask you one thing about him?
Go for it.
Do you think he's an off-ball linebacker, or do you think he's an edge defender?
Right. That's exactly the thing, because I tweeted that out earlier on Saturday.
Oh, did you?
When I was watching Texas, I said, you know what? I think I'm going to write about the fact that Malik Jefferson just isn't an off-ball linebacker, and I would try him at edge. I was going to write about it. I did his summer evaluation. So much variance, a lot of good plays, a lot of bad plays. He's such a great athlete, but he doesn't really have excellent instincts. He does have good instincts. He just doesn't play with discipline and. Sometimes his motor is just really poor, but other times he's flying around the field, and I don't know if I trust him in coverage, and sometimes he drops his hips and changes direction really nicely, and other times he takes like 10 years to turn around, and I just can't, there's so much variance, and it's frustrating because he's such a good athlete, and I just want him to put everything together. And I came into this season, I've covered Texas like four times. I love Todd Herman. I love that you know, their young quarterback, Parker Ellinger. I just like watching them play. So I've covered the Longhorns a lot. And in my live watchings, I was just thinking to myself, I'm not sold on Jefferson. I really don't think he can make it as a linebacker. Saw this most recent game that they played against TCU, or no, it wasn't against TCU, West Virginia. And I said, you know what? I don't think he's a linebacker. And so I'm going into the tape to go see, to get some edge clips for him to see what else, you know, where else he could go. And I'm watching the tape and I swear to you, he's making plays at linebacker I didn't think he was making. And I'm all in a twist, right? So at the end of the day, Malik Jefferson is a fantastic front seven athlete that you can play somewhere. I'm not sure I would be comfortable with him with the Eagles right now, because his biggest issue for sure is when he has to deal with climbing offensive linemen. And because the Eagles play such a penetrating style of defense, he would have to deal with that a lot. So he's probably, if he's an off-ball linebacker, a much better fit at a sort of a 3-4 defense that really two gaps a lot, right? Because you have 3-4s that slant and one gap, but a really two gap heavy where he doesn't have to deal with climbers and he can be fast to flow. Because if he's fast to flow and he doesn't have to handle climbing linebackers or climbing linemen, he can be very, very dangerous. So if the Eagles were to draft him, he would probably be exclusively a will. He would play very similarly, I think, to how Michael Kendricks does, where they blitz him a lot and they leave him in space and they really don't have him play in traffic because he doesn't have those instincts. I think Michael Kendricks is a really good schema to understand Malik Jefferson right now. And so in the event that Michael Kendricks gets moved on from this year by Philadelphia because of cap situations, and Malik Jefferson is there for the right price, because like I said, he's a great athlete, he could be somebody the Eagles look for to replace Kendricks' production.
I like it. Look forward to Ben's work on Malik Jefferson. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. He'll be dropping sweet, sweet GIF threads. All right, Ben, let the gentle listeners know what we have coming up for him for the rest of the week.
All right, gentle listeners, happy Tuesday to y'all. Wednesday, crossover pod, Lauren Cox of Locked On Bears. We've already recorded that puppy and it is a doozy. Lauren is the man. We had a ton of fun with him. Great time. Talked a lot of Big V. He's been playing very well, so that was a blast. Thursday, remember, we're taking off. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys. Enjoy your time with your family. Enjoy your food. Enjoy the games. Friday, we're back. We'll be recording that pod and preparing for y'all, getting ready for that Bears game.
So two things. Go follow at Locked On Bears and keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.